This meeting is now being recorded.
And is there anyone on the phone that's not in Adobe Connect? All right, and does anyone have updates to their statement of interest? Okay, great. So once again, this is Jordan Buchanan. This is the latest and greatest plenary call for the CCT review team, making our final push towards our supplement to the draft report, which will include updates based on information that we've received from the DNS abuse study, the INTA survey, and the NTLD stats legacy parking data. I think the parking portion is fairly locked down. We had an extensive discussion of the DNS abuse study, or DNS abuse write-up that Drew had put together yesterday, but somewhat ran out of time at the end of that conversation. And then we can start, so we'll start with that, and then we'll spend the last half hour of the call today talking about the initial inputs based on the INTA survey. So that's the update to the consumer choice section that I drafted, and then David sent around earlier today a section on the RPM. So why don't we go ahead and jump into the DNS abuse discussion again. Drew, based on the discussion yesterday, did we have any specific follow-on topics, or you and David were sort of mid-conversation on perhaps another recommendation, I think, at the end of the call?
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. So basically where we are is we need to, I guess, first agree on the two current recommendations as is, moving forward with those. And then David sent me an email to follow up on yesterday's call with two ideas for two more potential recommendations. And so I think we should certainly discuss those to see if that's – and I think the way we'd go about it is discuss the topics right now. If people agree in principle on the ideas, then David and I can go back and forth and draft recommendations and then circulate them, and then we can all agree or disagree on those going into the draft report by email. But right now it's probably most helpful to quickly – come to some sort of consensus on the two current proposed recommendations and to what degree they need to be tweaked before going out for public comment, with everyone, of course, recognizing that just because they're going out for public comment doesn't mean that they won't be tweaked before the final form, of course, based on the public feedback we get or based off of ideas we come up with in the interim. So, with that said, I saw that both Wado sent feedback, and I incorporated all of his feedback. And then just before the call, I saw that Kylie sent some feedback. And so we should probably discuss Kylie's proposal too, since that dealt specifically with the recommendation. Because Wado's dealt with the body of the text and fixing that, but Kylie's dealt with the recommendation. So could we please put the two recommendations up on the screen? And I think, unfortunately, in the paper I sent around, it had my random comments from the last call where I was taking notes on feedback. So the comments at the end only serve as reminders to me as the ideas that were expressed in there. So ignore them. They're not pertinent. So we have – okay, I guess I'm scrolling right. Thank you. Okay, so recommendation one, we have the recommendation to provide financial incentives to open registries to adopt proactive anti-abuse measures. And then we've already spoken in detail about the rationale behind this based on the findings from the report. And so I just wanted to bring your attention to Kylie's suggestion. And Kylie suggests that we broaden the wording a bit so that we're not only recommending financial incentives, because And I will read Kylie's feedback in case you haven't had a chance to see it. But Kylie says, I don't think rigorous analysis was conducted on this, including research on its pros and cons, feasibility, affordability, effectiveness, etc. Also, we recommend such financial incentives. As we recommend such financial incentives, we seem to be excluding other possible measures, which I don't believe we've carefully studied either. So Kylie's recommendation is to change this language to instead say, ICANN should consider providing incentives, including financial incentives, to registry operators with open registration policies that implement proactive measures to prevent technical DNS abuse in their zone. And so I think we should discuss that. So does anybody have any feedback on that suggestion, on changing that language? Jordan.
Hey, Drew. It's Jordan, yeah. So I think Drew and I discussed this initial recommendation quite a bit in Johannesburg. And I'll just sort of, at least from my perspective, I think it's worth thinking of the factors that went into the sort of no financial incentives, which is, and I'm not even sure that it may be that we want to reformulate it away from just talking strictly about the notion of incentives to maybe even thinking about disincentives as well. But I think what we see in the DNS abuse study and from the other data points that we have is the fact that if a TLD is both cheap and doesn't have either registration restrictions or other strong enforcement mechanisms for DNS abuse mitigation, that tends to those are the TLDs that tend to be sort of havens for DNS abuse, which makes sense, right? If you've got a TLD that will let anyone register and doesn't really have very strong mechanisms to deal with abuse, and it's really cheap. And of course, if you're a bad actor, you would prefer to use that over a more expensive TLD or one that has restrictions, et cetera. And so I think the idea was simply to start to put some amount of back pressure on the notion of having a TLD that is both really cheap and has no enforcement of any sort of anti-DNS abuse responsibilities, I guess. And I think one thing that stands out from the data that maybe we don't actually call out, and I don't know, Drew, if you agree with this even, is that it actually does look like XYZ, for example, which I think initially, which has always had pretty cheap domains, but I think at some point along the way they decided to start implementing some anti-abuse mechanisms. And if you look at the XYZ specific graphs, there's quite a downward trend after they adopt those mechanisms. So it does seem like it's possible to combine a cheap price with some anti-abuse mechanisms and decrease the amount of abuse. But otherwise, if registries don't do that, you still want to have some mechanism in place to sort of discourage them from having super low prices and no abuse at the same time. So I don't know exactly what that is, but I don't think we want to end up in a state where registries could just sort of decide that they don't want to do anything and have cheap prices and then have the internet sort of suffer as a result.
Thanks, yeah, for that feedback. Does anybody else have any feedback? Otherwise, I'll weigh in. Oh, Kylie, go ahead, and then I'll weigh in.
Yeah, thank you, Drew. Yeah, I fully agree with the original idea about financial incentives, including providing discounts, fees, and so forth. However, I just feel that right now it's a little premature to narrow down our options. So that's why I sort of changed the language a bit, so then we can leave the door open for other options or other actions. That's what my consider. And also, because if we truly provide like discounts, then there are a lot of issues that have come up and was being or like a kind of warm thing opened, and that a lot of questions might follow, like how much, what were the criteria, and so forth. So I think we just provide some recommendation, and then the implementation phase or the detailed options, well, which is just keep them open. And that, I think leaving the door open, that for our team, we have finished what we've done a good job. But we do not want to close the door on some of the options premature. That's all.
Thanks, Kylie. And Laureen, and then I'll chime in after Laureen.
Thanks, both Drew and Kylie and Jordan also. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So my first comment is I wonder if this needs to be restricted to open registries, and whether we might not be better served by having this applied to registries in general, because it certainly could be the case that even registries with more closed criteria lack anti-abuse measures. So that would be my first observation, that we change this to registries. I think in terms of incentives or disincentives, that I like the idea of making the incentives more general and saying to include financial incentives. Sometimes in many ways, if we provide an incentive and it's a benefit, the fact that someone isn't getting it is its own disincentive. So I'm not sure we need to say disincentives explicitly. That may be implicit. But in terms of Kylie's language, I think the real difference here is how strong we want the language. Whether we want to add that word "consider" or not. So those are my two basic comments. I think this is an important enough topic that I would be in favor of not putting the word "consider" in there, and I'm just recommending I can provide incentives, including financial incentives, to registry operators that implement proactive measures to prevent technical DNS abuse in their zone.
Thanks, Laureen. David?
Yeah, thanks, Drew. I think this ties into our discussion yesterday and where I was going on that DNS abuse generally and the registration policies. And I'm just one, for my part, I feel we should be going stronger on this, but I may be in the minority on that, I'm not sure. But it was sort of, because we're seeing this abuse, you know, which is inversely proportional to the stricter registration policies, as I said, when it's completely open, we are seeing abuse, and we're seeing some certain TLDs with an incredibly high level of abuse. And I just wondered whether we shouldn't be being more forceful and suggesting that there's a requirement to clean up the abuse rather than incentives, that we should say if you reach a certain level of abuse in a TLD, you should really be doing what you're doing at all. So you should be clearing it up. And or adopt stricter registration policies, and so that was where I was going with with that sort of thing. And I know we were sort of talking about another whether it's another recommendation or this one, but I just thought I'd just raise that because that's my feeling.
Thanks, David. And Carlton? Carlton, we can't hear you if you're speaking. Carlton, are you there? I hear a lot of static noise. Hey, Carlton, I don't know if you want to reconnect or just try typing your response, and I'll read it. So some reactions I have to what's been stated so far is, going back to Kylie's suggestion in general, I think that that's a good idea not to only name financial incentives and also open the door for other incentives that could be used to encourage this type of behavior. However, I don't want our recommendation to just be consider. I would like us to actually recommend that incentives are provided. And to the point brought up by Laureen about making this applicable to all registries, I see some problems in that, in just because of the fact that you could get a brand registry or a highly regulated .bank type of registry that isn't going to have the same sorts of abuse issues, and yet they'll adopt whatever anti-abuse measures and then get a discounted price. However, they weren't part of the problem to begin with. And so that's something where their business models would be completely different. With that said, maybe that's okay, but that's just something we have to consider, is that the type of registry we're calling out here with this recommendation as written is one for which the other variables that the researchers identified are not able to mitigate abuse, such as registration restrictions and price. And so that's why the TLDs with these registration restrictions and or high prices are not the problem we're going after. So this is kind of worded to go after the problem. And then we have seen, as Jordan mentioned, XYZ, for example, adopt a pretty robust proactive anti-abuse system. I mean, they developed their own homegrown system that they use to monitor abuse because of all the issues they had. And I think that's the type of behavior we're wanting to encourage for any of these registries that are completely open. Those are my thoughts on why we're being targeted. So, I'd love to get some more feedback if you think we could still accomplish that same goal and it still would be a true incentive package, even if we're saying this applies to all registries. And if we're saying all, then we are including ones we didn't even really carefully look at, such as brands. Then let me know what you think there. And then in terms of, why specifically we're saying financial incentives, we know that financial incentives, particularly for a small registry, are going to be helpful with encouraging behavior. Because if you're a small registry and you're deciding whether or not you're going to add something extra to your system to be able to be proactive about things, and a financial incentive would be a strong incentive to encourage some sort of behavior. And so at a high level, our goal with this is to encourage behavior that mitigates this problem we've identified. And so with all that said,
you know, I welcome more feedback on how to fix this, but in general, I like using some of the language Kylie suggested to broaden that recommendation a bit. And let me, I'll read from the chat to see if Carlton is able to get his point out. All right, Carlton, we can't hear you if you have been trying again to speak. To Carlton, I recommend typing. Oh, here's the device. Is it Carlton? We can't hear you at all, Carlton. So, perhaps you should type. Jean-Baptiste is offering to call you, Carlton. So we'll wait for Carlton's feedback. But in the interim, let's try and get somewhere here where we have more consensus, even if this is not yet a perfect recommendation, because this is intended to show our thinking and show a form of recommendation that we're going to propose so that we can get feedback from the community, and that feedback will probably help us make this stronger too. Or if Jonathan Zook was on the line, he would say that wouldn't necessarily be the case. But since the pessimist is not here, I'm going to say it's going to help us make it stronger.
Can I jump in? Because I think
jump in. Sorry, I didn't even see your hand. Yeah, jump in, Lori.
There's a little bit of a conflation going on in the chat, and I think it's useful to separate it. This recommendation talks about providing financial incentives to adopt proactive anti-abuse measures. And there's a back and forth in the chat that also talks about imposing some sort of action for a failure to correct abuse, which I think is the topic of your next recommendation and should be discussed then. But in terms of ICANN's authority, I'm a little confused in the chat, and maybe Jamie could speak to this. It strikes me that ICANN would have the ability to provide incentives to open registries that adopt anti-abuse measures, and that would—I mean, I'm assuming, and that would be the prices that ICANN charges to the registries, among other things. But maybe you could speak to that, because it seemed to me that there was a back and forth in the chat that. I couldn't tell if you were talking about providing financial incentives or imposing an obligation to take care of abuse.
Thanks, Laureen, and I had missed some parts of that chat. So thank you for reading that out to me. That's correct. So this is dealing with preventing these things from happening to begin with, and encouraging proactive behaviors so you're not getting these high levels of abuse and, and in particular, you're not leaving the ecosystem where it is today, where it appears that price and registration restrictions are the dominating factors in determining whether or not a TLD will suffer from high levels of abuse. And whereas the second recommendation is to address after the fact systemic abuse and provide more tools to deal with that so that you don't have to wait for an individual domain by domain complaint and or a violation of one of the other safeguards, because we're seeing that the safeguards alone obviously did not seem to give in the current complaint system did not seem to give ICANN compliance a chance to stop some of these registries that have been identified as really bad before they had either had sustained levels of abuse for very long periods of time, or, you know, did something else bad, and that's part of the problem. And so, you know, what we have to remember is this technical abuse is, something that was identified as one of the fears with ushering in the expansion of the DNS. And so our recommendations here are saying, oh, the safeguard that were developed to mitigate those issues that were identified have not on their own done enough, but here are some things that could do more with that issue. And so the second recommendation I just saw Jordan pointing out that it's, as written, it's only right now applying to registrars, and so that's correct. And am I bringing it up? Yeah. So this is the second recommendation, and we're proposing that an amendment to the registrar accreditation agreement to prevent systemic use of specific registrars for technical DNS abuse, and saying that such language should impose upon registrars and their affiliates, such as resellers, a duty to mitigate technical DNS abuse, whereby ICANN may suspend registrars found to be associated with unabated, abnormal, and extremely high rates of technical abuse. And then we're getting into, you know, how ICANN must base such findings, and then how there's a rebuttable presumption and whatnot. But this is to take care of abuse that's already existing, already identified and not being mitigated. So that way, the community doesn't have to sit back while people are victimized and just accept that a registrar might kind of be doubling as a cybercrime enterprise willfully or even unwittingly. So for the first comment, what I would suggest at this point, because we really need to get to David, is the first recommendation, please send emails to the group about specific ways to tweak that language, because from what I'm seeing, it doesn't sound like anyone is completely opposed to the recommendation. Instead, people are have feedback for how to improve the wording, either expanding it slightly or being more specific about certain parts of it. So please email about that. And then secondly, let's really quickly, I guess, go over this second recommendation, and then go on to David, and we might have to continue this via email. Oh, and Calvin, I see your hand up.
Okay, Calvin, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Yeah, I just noticed something in the chapter there that I don't think is 100% right. For instance, when you say, for example, there's precedent for ICANN adjusting its fee price structure to address behavior harmful to consumers, such as abolishing the automatic fee refund for the main toasters. I don't think that tasting thing was actually harming consumers so much as it was actually harming the registry operators. The registry operators were having a tough time scaling systems to these millions of domains that were being deleted and tested en masse. So I'm not sure that wording there is quite right. I agree it was harmful behavior, but I don't think consumers were the recipients of those harmful behaviors so much as the registry operators.
Thanks, Calvin. It was my understanding that both were affected because consumers would be affected by the fact that these domain names were being registered, potentially highly sought after domain names or whatnot, registered so they couldn't access them. And then with the domain name tasting, that was kind of a way of driving up prices where you would be able to kind of test the market for this. And so in that sense, it was affecting consumers' ability to go directly and get a domain name that would otherwise be available. So my understanding is that it was affecting both. But perhaps I should use some more specific language to describe both of those scenarios and something that affected the DNS ecosystem and different players.
Okay. So let's take a typical domain name testing scenario. If you were the domain name evil domain name toaster, you would register 100,000 names. You would see which ones generated enough traffic to earn advertising revenue from Google or whoever, and you would keep those and discard the rest. Now, there was a period within that 5-day period that a consumer couldn't get that name. But typically it would only last 5 days and they would be able to get the name that they wanted. And it would only take the names that generated the necessary advertising traffic to actually,
it was instantly creating a second marketplace because you would be in, back then they were incentivized to be able to register as many as they wanted. And so, instantly the prices and whatnot would be changing even within that 5-day period. And then if something was sold, then that was a success. Whereas that speculator may not have taken a chance to go and register it if they knew they had to pay for it. So I still think, consumers were definitely affected by that.
I agree with you. They were affected. I don't think they were actually the brunt of most of the harm. I think the real problem was simply registries were having a hard time scaling to meet these constant deletions and registrations and deletions. So it was more the registries than the end user that was bearing the full brunt of this. Anyway. Just some clarity there.
Okay. If you want, we can we'll go ahead and we can add some more context to that sentence, or at least in the footnote. So the point of including that is to demonstrate precedent for affecting the fee structure to tackle some behavior that was harmful to consumers, even if, as you're stating, perhaps. It was more harmful to other parties such as registry operators. It still was a use of the fee structure to affect behavior and change incentives. And so that's, similar to what we're getting at with our proposals, that this is a tool that could be used to change incentives. I'll adjust that language and then send it to the group and then definitely get back to me on how I can, if I need to tweak it anymore.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you, Calvin. So does anybody else, I guess at this point we need to get to David. So then please get back to me in the chat, which now I'll pay closer attention to, or via email, and let me know if there's anything we need to do to these recommendations before we would put them out for public comment, acknowledging that the recommendations in their current form can certainly be improved upon before they become our final recommendations. But the goal here is to get them in the shape we think we need them to be in before they go out for public comment. And then David and I will have to send out the potential additional recommendations via email for your feedback and decide via group email whether or not there's consensus to also add those. All right, thanks, everyone. I'll pass it on to you, David.
Okay, thanks, Drew. Jordan, did you want, because you're on the agenda before me, I'm not actually on there, did you want to go through the consumer additions and then I'll come on to mine, or do you want me to just go ahead?
I'm happy to go through the consumer ones quickly. They're pretty straightforward, so maybe it's an easy exercise. They don't affect the recommendations at all. So someone from staff, do you want to present the consumer section really quick? Maybe. I will will tell you.
Jordan, just one
so in any case,
we have an issue with Adobe Connect.
Okay, well, I'll tell folks, hopefully people have seen, is that this was also sent out as an attachment to the agenda by Jean-Baptiste. And here it is, in any case. This is just some edits to the consumer choice section of the report in order to incorporate the INTA survey data. Can I have scrolling powers? Great. This red line's not showing up. Oops. Okay. In any case, what you can see is there is, let me see if I can find the spots really quickly, but in this paragraph here. There is a reference to the fact that the INTA survey was complete. In the following paragraph, near the bottom, you'll see that there's a reference to the fact that the INTA survey found that for the trademark holders that were represented by INTA, that the new TLD registrations are primarily duplicate legacy or TLD or CC-TLD registrations. And the only 17% of all of the respondents in the INTA survey had registered names for the first time, so like a unique name that they were registering in a new GTLD versus one that was just a duplicate of a existing name. And then let me see if I can figure out where else. Oops. Here. I'm going to make it big again. Nope. In any case, you'll see at the top of the CCT analysis trademarks section that there's another reference to the INTA survey saying that nearly all of the domains registered were duplicates. As a rationale for taking a look at the data that we look at. The analysis of the TMCH data itself doesn't really change. So this still finds that there is, a significant number of defensive registrations, but it still only represents a less than a fraction of a percent of the total registration in the new GTLD. So basically this just adds some color. The previous statement was there's some defensive behavior going on, and the trademark registrants in particular might be registering defensively, and that's a cost. And this the INTA survey sort of reinforced that point. So there's some language added here to just bring out those findings from the INTA study, which does show that for trademark holders in particular, there was almost all of the activity in the new GTLDs was defensive in nature. Any questions or comments about those changes?
Jordan, can you send around another version that actually has the red line showing up, after the call,
maybe.
Just so we can...
I thought I had the red line already on it, so I don't know why it's not showing up.
It's not but in I'll the document
I'll,
itself either.
Sure. Then I don't know, but I'll try.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Well, Lorraine, basically what I'd say is if you do a find in the doc and search for INTA, and all of those references are new, basically.
Got it.
But I'll try to find a red line. All right, so once again, this doesn't change the recommendations. This just incorporates a little bit of the findings into this section of the report. So if there's no other comments, I will turn it back over to David.
Thanks, Jordan. RPM's INTA impact study then, if Jean-Baptiste, you could put that document up, which I circulated round about earlier today. And basically, you'll see while it's loading up, what you'll see, and sorry, we haven't had a plenary call on this at all, so we've had a number of other things. So I've got an ongoing there at the beginning, so you can actually see where we are on this. And as you know, we had this INTA impact study, so we've been discussing it on the INTA subgroup calls, which myself, Jordan, Carlos, Waddo and Carlton, and Dujan, and we prepared a takeaway clarification list, which was there, and then we sought some input from the INTA on that, and then further input from the INTA subgroup on that, and then I had a call with Nielsen in August concerning it and aiming to get some objective input from Nielsen so that our sort of takeaways were as objective as they can be. So we got that input as well, so I've circulated that to the sub-team. I'm happy to circulate it to the wider group if that's of any interest at all. And last week we had a call again on the inter-sub group, so I was seeking whether there's any further comments on the Nielsen comments, because there were some clarifications in there and a change of the slide on the total defensive costs per company, so there's been changes there. And then the next thing was to prepare this initial draft. So what I've done to avoid not having a redline version, to avoid the wrath of Laureen, I've just stuck it all as new text here. So this is the draft new wording. I haven't yet sought to insert it into the RPM study. And you've got the draft wording there, and then I've put in suggested 10 takeaways, which are essentially from the takeaways which we've had and discussed. So there's not a lot necessarily changing. It's just got a bit better wording, and I've gone into it a bit more detail. So I don't know whether it's worth, and we've got time to start going through those, because I can read it all out to everybody, or perhaps everyone wants to read them themselves, the takeaways, and provide comments by email if you haven't got time today, or we can chat about any of those today. So I don't know whether you want me to run through them or not. Let me know, whoever's in charge. Is that you, Laureen, in charge, or should we just actually sit there and run through them and read them?
I took a quick look at this, and thank you for pulling it all together so quickly, given all your competing obligations, so I appreciate that. When I read this overall, it strikes me that your conclusion is that the new GTLD program was a cost rather than a real benefit to folks with the IP interests. And what I wonder is, are you thinking about, and pardon me if I'm missing something, are you thinking about recommendations that are going to flow from this? Because this presents, a not rosy view of the impact of the new GTLDs on folks who are seeking to protect their intellectual property interests.
Potentially, I think your conclusion's right there. It's certainly more of a cost than a benefit. I don't think it's the cost that was expected to be, or many thought that it would be. So that's a positive, if we can have a positive takeaway from that. And as to recommendations, yes, potentially we can go further than the three recommendations which we had, which is, in effect, more studies on this, and that's something certainly we need to discuss on the wider group, because it can have quite a far-reaching repercussions, and we need to know how far to go.
So it looks like you have some questions from Carlton and Jordan, and I think Jamie put down his hand.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, looks like Carlton put down his hand too, so it's Jordan. I'll just
I was just going to briefly react to Oren's point. I think it is definitely a true statement that the INTA survey tends to reinforce the impression I think that we already had from the initial report, but maybe makes it clearer that for trademark holders in particular, that the program is probably a net negative. There's costs, but there's not necessarily, we're not seeing benefits articulated by trademark holders in general. There's a few registrations, and I just saw this morning actually a Amazon TV ad where they were got AWS as their as the URL and the call to action. So I guess a few of the trademark holders, probably those that got their own TLDs, may see slightly different, have a slightly different perspective. But in any case, I agree that this reinforces the notion that it was net cost. However, I think it's important to put that in perspective, right? As David said, the sort of forecast costs for the program were, people talking about spending millions of dollars, whereas we see that even looking at total enforcement costs across all TLDs, not just new GTLDs, are some more like $150,000. And just as importantly, if you look at the actual scale of the defensive trademark registrations from the TMCH report that we extrapolate out in our report, it's 0.2% of all registrations. So it's really quite a small, if you look at the totality of the program, I don't think we should get, this is a vocal section, like segment of domain registrants, but I don't think we should overweight the input from INTA in saying that like this should really drive recommendations strongly given how small a fraction of the total registration volume it really represents.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. I echo that. I think that does make sense. I think really, for me, possibly one of the more important takeaways or indications of it is the recommendation six, or the takeaway, not recommendation, the takeaway number six there, which you can see when we're comparing it to the total number of domain name registrations. And we've got the same thing when we look at the number of UDRPs. That was the data I got from WIPO. There's a disproportionate number of UDRPs being filed in new GTLDs than in legacy. So we see it. It's not a massive disproportion. We've talked about this. When you look through the figures here, we're looking at actually about 18% of the overall costs seem to be related to new GTLDs. When we compare that to number of new GTLD registrations, which is approximately at the same time period of 10%. So that is certainly a conclusion we can draw. All data is pointing to that. But again, it's not a 50% or 60 or 70 or 80%, but it is higher. So I think that's at least we can see that.
Jamie has a comment.
And as your comment in there,
Jamie
and you,
has a comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jordan, then your comment on there about the RPMs, trademark holders seem to like the old ones. Yes, I think that's probably true. I think it obviously with everything like that, it takes a while for people to understand what the options are and what's available in the UDRP now. Certainly 15, 16 years on is understood amongst brand owners, and certainly if I look at the number of times we advise between the UDRP and the URS, there's a very, very basic understanding of the difference, and even some of the comments which are made in the INTA report show that those people who are commenting on it don't actually know how to use the URS because they're factually incorrect on it. So I think there's the difficulty there, perhaps, that the URS is overly complex. We can take away a lot of those, but the UDRP is a known RPM, and hence I think that's why it's preferred. So, yeah, go ahead, Jamie.
Thanks. I just sent around a red line, and just to talk to it very quickly because I know we're running out of time, and these are comments rather than edits. I think for the sake of transparency, it's important to, on page two, to indicate how many respondents participated, especially since you highlight how many members of INTA there are. And I think it goes to the, to the rest of your thing about the statistical standpoint requiring caution. And then on the other two, maybe Nielsen will help with this, but there are two sort of qualitative statements or quantitative statements, I guess, that I think should be substantiated with data. One is that the response rate is for the survey is above the norm for a similar sample. What's the basis for that? And especially when the sample rate is as low as I think I remember it being, but I could be wrong. And same thing for the indicative of if it is a small sample rate, how can that be indicative of key themes and trends? That's it.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Jamie. Yeah, makes sense. Anything else? I think, Laureen, you were going to ask something, and I rudely interrupted you.
No. My real question was whether this was going to change the recommendations at all, and what I'm hearing is that not at this point. It's more to report the results of the INTA study. So I understand that. And it seems to me your first recommendation 40, does cover this topic in calling for a general look at the costs involved with protecting IP rights in terms of the new GTLD program. So to that extent, I do think we cover it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I think you're right on that, and I think with the it's hard to know where we'd go with the recommendation, because I think many brand owners would like new GTLDs to go away, but that's not a recommendation we can make apart from the point of view of brand owners. We're just underlining it, but how we can translate that into an actual recommendation, other than, and that's why I'm completely in line with what we're doing with Druid, et cetera, to minimize abuse, whatever type of abuse. I think that's where we need to concentrate and focus.
Right. And on that point, Carlton has sent around an email for everyone that I also wanted to leave folks with it. Carlton has made the point, and Carlton can tell me if I'm characterizing it correctly, that in terms of the abuse recommendations, we're looking at this the wrong way. What we should be doing is having recommendations focused on penalizing abuse rather than creating financial incentives to reward good behavior. And Carlton's, this echoes Carlton's earlier point, which is that the contracts already have provisions that prohibit many types of abuse, and in his view, the way to go about it is in terms of penalties for bad behavior rather than rewards for good behavior. So I did want to make sure people are aware of that if they're providing feedback on Drew's DNS recommendations, because Carlton has communication technical difficulties with getting his points across. And just to be clear, I didn't read Carlton's message.
Please read his email in his own words for yourself.
Okay, so we are at 11 o'clock. And what I'm going to ask people to do, under very short timelines, is today, if possible, please provide written feedback that you have to both Drew and David so that we have an opportunity to meet our deadlines here. And then stay tuned to see if we're going to need further calls to get the final green lights on this, or whether we can do that via email. Jamie, do you still have a question, or is that an old hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Okay. Any other questions or comments before we adjourn? Okay, then I think we're okay. Maybe Carlton and some ICANN technical folks can have at least an email communication about how to ensure his participation verbally as well as via the chat. That would be much better for everyone, I think. Okay, everyone. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lori.
Bye, everyone.